Hello, everyone. We are here live with Dr. Magda Havas. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you also, Silvia and Daniela, for being here together with this interview. Thank you very much, Dr. Magda Havas, to help us to know more and understand more about this subject and know more about your very beautiful projects. And we thank you very much. I'm not sure if it's the first time you talk to a Brazilian audience, but we are very happy to have you here today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate that.
Okay. So may we start the presentation?
Yes. So I'm going to be talking about electrical hypersensitivity and about electrosmog. And these are two terms that some people in the audience may not be familiar with. So I would like to describe them. And I'd like to make this presentation as interactive as possible. So I'm going to get the audience to do a few things while they're listening to the presentation. When we talk about electrosmog, we're talking about electromagnetic pollution. And most of this started back in the 1900s, where we had the use of electricity. We had the introduction of radio, which allowed us to communicate around the world. Microwaves were introduced first during World War II with radar. Radar uses microwave radiation. Cell phones, Wi-Fi, smart meters are all using microwave radiation to communicate. We then have an issue with something called dirty electricity that comes from your computer, your compact fluorescent energy efficient light bulbs, solar and wind power, and smart meters. And then we have something called ground current pollution that is also a problem around wind turbines and areas where they have solar power. In 2020, that's supposed to be the year of the 5G and the internet of things. And so you can see here that the amount of electromagnetic pollution to which we are exposed is increasing exponentially. And so the term electrosmog applies to all of these different frequencies that people are exposed to. And just to give you an example of how much things have increased over time, this is a map using something called Wiggle.net, W-I-G-L-E.net. And you can find where they have Wi-Fi routers around the globe over time. And so if we look at North and South America on this graph in 2005, all of these purple and yellow spots are areas with Wi-Fi routers. And you can see that the United States has a lot of them in 2005, and South America has relatively few. In 2010, this is what it looks like. And although it looks like there hasn't been much of a change in South America, that's not the case. You can see here, Sao Paulo, for example, and a few other places have these little purple and red spots, and those are all Wi-Fi installations. And this is what it looks like in 2020. So within 10 years, there has been a huge change, particularly in South America. And I'd like to show you just a close-up of some of the areas in Brazil that have a lot of Wi-Fi exposure. So this is microwave exposure. And you can see many of the larger cities along the roadways. So this really shows you the radiation that people are likely to be exposed to. The brighter the spots, the more microwave radiation. And this is what it looks like globally. The really bad areas are North America, and particularly the United States and southern parts of Canada. And then Europe is also a hotspot. And you can see that Africa, parts of South America, parts of Asia, and a very large part of Australia that isn't inhabited has very few of this type of radiation. The second term that I introduced is electrohypersensitivity. And electrohypersensitivity refers to an inability to tolerate electromagnetic fields and electromagnetic radiation at levels that the governments state are safe. So people are becoming sensitive and they're reacting even though we are not exceeding any government guidelines. Electro-hypersensitivity is recognized as a disability in the United States. And so the rest of this presentation is going to be a question and answer. You don't have to answer right away. You just have to count your answers. And the question we're asking is, do you have electro-hypersensitivity? I'm going to ask you 45 questions that have a yes, no answer. And what I'd like the audience to do is to count the number of yes answers to these questions. Now, you won't be able to count on your fingers and toes because there's 45 questions. So if you have access to a piece of paper and a pencil, you might want to jot down the number of yes answers you have to these questions. And the first question is, do you like fluorescent light bulbs? If you answered, or do you dislike fluorescent light bulbs? If you answered no, they're fine, I don't mind them at all, chances are you're not electrically sensitive. If your answer is yes, I don't like them, then you're possibly electrosensitive. And if you answered, I can't tolerate these light bulbs, then you're probably moderately to severely electrosensitive. These light bulbs emit something called dirty electricity, radio frequency radiation, ultraviolet light, and they flicker when they're on. And these are all things that people who have become sensitized to electromagnetic energy, they simply can't tolerate. Question number two, do you feel older than your chronicle age? So if you're within this age group, but you feel like you're at least 10 years older, that is one of the symptoms of electro-hypersensitivity. People feel older than their actual years. Now, here are a series of questions that deal with the symptoms of electro-hypersensitivity. Question three, do you have difficulty sleeping? What that means is you either can't sleep, can't get to bed, can't get to sleep quickly. You wake up during the night. You have difficulty falling back to sleep and you wake up tired. Chronic fatigue. Do you lack energy? Do you need naps occasionally? Are you feeling drained and tired most of the time? Now remember to count yes or no for each of these questions. Do you have chronic pain in different parts of your body? Do you have any mood disorders, anxiety or panic attacks, depression or irritability? Do you have problems with short-term memory, difficulty concentrating, difficulty remembering names and words? Some people call this a foggy brain where they simply can't think as quickly as they used to do. Do you have any visual disruptions? If you used a computer for a number of hours, does your eyesight become blurry? Do you have cataracts? Microwaves are known to cause cataracts. Do you have a hearing problem, particularly ringing in the ears? This is called tinnitus or tinnitus, and a lot of people experience this. Do you have any movement difficulties, dizziness, or problems with balance? Do you have skin rashes that develop when you're exposed to this radiation? And finally, do you have any heart issues where you have pain or pressure in the heart, in the chest area, and it feels like you're having a heart attack? Remember to record your answers. Questions 13 to 32. Which of the following devices do you use or do you have in your home, at work, or at school? Do you use a cell phone? Have you used it for more than 10 years? Do you hold it next to your body? Do you put it inside your bra, inside a pocket, hold it on a belt? And when you talk, do you hold it next to your head? did you start using it before the age of 20? We found there was one study done by Dr. Leonard Hardell in Sweden showing that young people who started using a cell phone before the age of 20 and who held it up to their head, up to their ear when they were talking, have a much greater risk of developing a brain tumor on that side of the head. The reason I asked question 14, have you used it for more than 10 years? The studies are showing that brain tumors are developing after 10 years of use. And by having it in your bra or pocket, the closer it is to your body, the more radiation you are exposed to. Question 17, do you use a cordless phone? And the same questions apply. Have you used it for more than 10 years before the age of 20? And do you have one in your bedroom? Now, believe it or not, cordless phones are worse than cell phones because they radiate all the time. So if you have a cordless phone in your house, chances are that if you were to be able to measure it, you would hear the radiation coming from it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether or not you're using your cell phone. So it's really important to not have a cordless phone in your home and certainly not keep it in your bedroom. Your bedroom should be electromagnetically clean as possible so that you can sleep properly and heal during the night. Do you use a Wi-Fi for your internet access? Is the Wi-Fi router in your bedroom? The closer you are to the Wi-Fi router, the higher your exposure is likely to be. And most people leave their Wi-Fi routers on all the time, even in the middle of the night when they're not using it. This is a waste of energy, and it's going to expose you during the night to unnecessary radiation. What other wireless devices you have? And if you have any of these, indicate yes for each of the devices that you have in your home. Bluetooth, iPad, wireless earbuds, baby monitor, wireless printer, keyboard, or mouse. Do you use your computer for hours each day? Do you have a wireless smart meter, a wireless security system, and do you have something called a smart home? Questions 33 to 40 refer to technologies that are near your home. These are normally technologies and radiation that you don't have any control over. Do you live within 100 meters of high voltage transmission lines or 20 meters of electrical distribution lines? Do you live within 400 meters of cell phone antennas, within 2 to 4 kilometers of broadcast antennas for either television or radio, or within 6 kilometers of a military base, an airport or a seaport where they use radar technology? Do you live near neighbors? And that is, you know, close to neighbors. Do you live in a multi-unit dwelling where the houses are very close, close to each other? People who have cordless phones in their home or Wi-Fi, that radiation will transmit at least 100 meters in most cases. And so you'll be exposed to your neighbor's radiation. And if you live in multi-unit dwellings, a high-rise, a condominium, the highest exposure tends to be near the top, near the penthouse, and at the bottom of the apartment building. And once again, you're going to be exposed to where smart meters are and radiation coming from your neighbors. Have you ever suffered from any of the following conditions? Physical trauma to your nervous system. If you've been in a sporting accident or a car accident and you have whiplash or a concussion, this damages your nervous system and it can lead to electrical hypersensitivity. Do you have excessive chemical exposure in terms of pesticides, toxic metals, drugs, Mercury is a really serious one. Many people have silver mercury amalgam fillings, and this leaches mercury into your body. Mercury is a neurotoxin. It's toxic to nerve cells. And because of that, it can make you sensitive to electromagnetic radiation, which is also a neurotoxin. And the ink used in tattoos is actually a metal ink, and that can increase your sensitivity. Have you had excessive electrical exposure in terms of shocks, electrocution? People who have been struck by lightning and survived tend to become electrically sensitive. If you've had excessive exposure by living near power lines, antennas, being exposed to Wi-Fi or mobile phones. Do you have biological trauma in the sense of having a mold issue, parasites? People who have Lyme disease tend to become electro-hypersensitive. And very often these diseases and the chemical exposure needs to be reduced in order for people to recover. So knowing which of these things you've experienced help doctors determine the type of treatment you require. And finally, if you have an impaired immune system because of cancer or AIDS or certain drugs that you've been taking that impair the immune system, if you're very old or very young, then chances are you will be more likely to be sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. Now, in this questionnaire, what I'd like you to do now is add up all of the yes answers that you got. Now, questions 1 to 12 dealt with your symptoms of electrohypersensitivity. Questions 13 to 32 dealt with your exposure in your home that you should be able to control in most cases. Questions 33 to 40 dealt with exposures outside of your home that are more difficult to control. And questions 40 to 45 are dealing with preconditions that may have initiated your sensitivity. If you answered yes to less than 5 of these questions, you are unlikely to be sensitive, and your exposure to electromagnetic pollution is likely to be quite low. If you answered yes to more than 5 questions, then we have an issue, and chances are we should look at your environment and your symptoms, and you might need to get a professional medical diagnosis regarding your sensitivity. The good news is that we are able to reduce your exposure for all of the yes answers in questions 13 to 32 in your home. And the good news is you are able to remediate your preconditions in questions 40 to 45. And doing these two things, you should be able to reduce your sensitivity and improve your health. Now, how many people have electrohypersensitivity? I believe that 3% of the population, and this could vary from 1 to 10%, so I use 3 as the type of percentage where people are severely affected. And I believe that a number of people have mild to moderate sensitivity, about a third of the population. So in Canada, we have a population of approximately 33 million people. About 1 million of them are extremely sensitive to this radiation. In South America, your population is 422 million. So you've got 13 million people in South America who are virtually debilitated or will become debilitated by this radiation should they continue to be exposed. And in Brazil, we're talking about a total of 6 million people who are likely to become severely electrically sensitive. Now, why are so many people developing electrohypersensitivity? And they're developing it because we're increasing our exposure exponentially. A lot of the new technology is wireless. People are using it because it's very convenient. but at the same time, it could be damaging their health. And once again, I'd like to remind you of just Wi-Fi. So this doesn't have cell phone antennas. It doesn't have broadcast antennas. It doesn't have internet access in your home apart from wireless technology. Can people with electrohypersensitivity recover? And the good news is, yes, they can. And what we recommend as their treatment protocol, we've labeled R-squared ID. And R-squared ID stands for the following. The first R stands for reducing your exposure to electrosmog. This is absolutely vital. Without reducing your exposure, you are not going to recover. And if anything, your symptoms are going to get worse over time. The second R stands for rebalancing the limbic system. The limbic system is that part of your brain that is involved in your emotional emotions. And it's usually located in the temporal zone, right by your temple towards your ear. And some people are in a constant fight or flight response because they're sick, they know they're exposed, they can't do anything about their exposure, so they're under a great deal of stress. And whether their exposure is real or imaginary, their body is still exposed to stress. So rebalancing the limbic system, getting control over your emotions is absolutely critical to recover. Improving your immune system is also important. And then detoxifying your body is also important. The first R is treating the environment. And the next three, R2 and I and D, is for treating the person. And so very often you need to get professional medical advice for the R2 ID, and you need to get advice from someone who does environmental monitoring to ensure that your exposure is reduced. So this is the present situation. Anyone under this waterline is adversely affected, and I'm showing here about a third of the population. This is where we are currently in Europe, in North America, in other parts of the world that have been exposed to electromagnetic pollution for quite a long time. The situation may not be as bad in South America because your exposure has been somewhat less than in other parts of the world. However, if we do nothing about changing the government guidelines, which are in most countries not protective, if we allow Wi-Fi in schools, in parks, with public transit on airplanes and buses, trains, in hospitals, if we allow smart meters and smart appliances, and if people end up having smart homes where your cell phone can turn appliances on and off, including your lights, and if we end up having 5G technology everywhere with driverless cars, and if we have people using wireless wearables like your smartwatch or your Fitbit, then chances are this water level or this level of exposure is going to increase. And instead of a third of the population, we're going to have the majority of the population who will develop these symptoms. And unfortunately, once you become severely electrohypersensitive, it will be very difficult for you to do your normal daily functions as a parent, a grandparent. It will be very difficult for you to go to work, especially if you're exposed in the work environment. And it's unlikely that this one person will be able to take care of the rest of us who have developed sensitivity should our exposure continue to increase. However, we can have a different future. If we establish radio frequency free zones, these are environments that don't allow any microwave radio frequency electromagnetic field radiation. If we can lower the guidelines that the government has set, if we can use wired exposure, wired Ethernet or fiber optics in schools, wired routers in your home, Ethernet, for example, if we can wire smart meters and smart appliances rather than using them in a wireless mode, And if we can place a moratorium on 5G so that it's not deployed as quickly as they would like, then chances are we could reduce our exposure to a no effect level where most people in society, except maybe for perhaps less than 1%, will be able to tolerate their environment. If it doesn't move, it doesn't need to be wireless. This is a really important mantra. Your smart meter doesn't have to be wireless because you're never going to move your smart meter. We need to stop this insanity. And what I'd like to do now is introduce you to a number of websites that are exceptionally good. Let me just go back to that. Nope, I can't show it. I'll provide those websites for you in a minute, if I can find my presentation again. There we go. ehtrust.org, safer emf.com, microwavenews.com, Magda Havas, which is my website.com, and the electrosensitivesociety.com. And this is from the Electrosensitive Society website. This is one of the best sites that I can recommend for people who have or believe they may have electrohypersensitivity. And there's a lot of resources here for doctors, there's videos available, there's social media resources and books and other resources. So this is an excellent website for people to come to. And Shea Symington, who's the director of the Electrosensitive Society, I believe will be speaking next week with this group. And so you'll be learning more from her about this particular issue. And with that, I'd like to open it up for questions and answers.
Thank you very much, Dr. Magda Havas. I believe this mantra is incredible. If it doesn't move, doesn't need to be wireless.
Obviously, right?
That's a very good mantra.
Yeah. So your cell phone has to be wireless. There's no way you can get away with that. But a lot of things in our home don't. And our home is our most important environment. And so if you can create a sanctuary in your home, you can stay safe. And so when you go out into the environment and you're exposed, your body can tolerate it so much better. And keeping a clean electromagnetic environment in the middle of the night is very important because that's when your body is healing. So turning off, you know, if you have to use Wi-Fi, fine, but turning it off at night will help your body heal. Getting rid of cordless phones will help your body heal.
Magda Havas, can I make a question? You were talking about electrohypersensitivity. And I would like to know, what about braces that people wear that has metal? Does it have any effect on our health? How does it work?
It has a huge effect. There was one, your speaker is very loud. Yeah, did you mute it good? It has a huge effect having braces or any kind of metal in your mouth, metal braces, metal implants. When radiation hits your head, the microwave radiation, it penetrates and it can go right through your body. So it's absorbed by your tissue. And if you happen to have braces in your jaw, in your teeth, when the radiation comes in, it then bounces around. And so you're actually getting a higher exposure than someone who wouldn't have metal braces or metal in their body. And I have a story. This is a young student in Toronto who was attending a private school and she became electrically hypersensitive. This was a high school and she had metal braces. And when she was in the hallway standing near a Wi-Fi router, she would pass out, she would faint, she would collapse. And it happened several times. And then she had the braces replaced with plastic or other material. And she didn't have the problem after that. So having metal anywhere in your body, but particularly near your head area, makes you a little bit more sensitive.
But Magda, even the glasses, when you have metal, it also can affect you?
Yes, if you have glasses, they will reflect. And we don't know how they reflect, like they reflect, we don't know where they're hitting you, because it depends on where the radiation is coming from. Same with underwire bras. You know, the wire under a bra, it actually redirects the radiation into your breast. So it's a good idea to use plastic if, you know, you're using plastic rather than wire for your breast support.
Dr. Magda Havas, can you hear me well?
I can, thank you.
Yeah, so thank you very much for your presentation. I would like to know a little bit about the 5G moratorium and how it could affect these implants, medical implants and the heart devices that help people with their health. And how are they going to be affected by 5G?
Okay, you've actually just asked three different questions, I think. Let me just make sure I've got them all right. So the first one was the moratorium on 5G, right? The second one, how does it affect your heart? And the third one was what you could, like, beneficial?
Frequency? Oh, the prothesis that people have, implants that people, metal implants that people have in their body.
Okay. When it comes to metal implants, the same applies to braces and to things in your head that might be metallic. If you have metal in your hip, for example, you've had hip surgery, we find that if you're in an area with high exposure, that metal around your hip is going to re-radiate to the tissue. And if it's high enough, you will feel heating. It will get warm. So you'll feel uncomfortable. And very often you'll be able to tell when you're exposed and you just walk away from the exposure and then the heating goes away. So any metal anywhere in your body, whether it's a zipper, jewelry, or whether it's inside your body, same effect. When it comes to a heart pacemakers, for example, that people might have, pacemakers, the old ones were very sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. And people with pacemakers were told not to be near a microwave oven when it's turned on because it could affect their pacemaker. They're now making pacemakers that are shielded against radiation. And so they're improving them. They're realizing that there's an interference. What they're not doing, what we're not doing, is protecting our heart from this radiation. We can protect the pacemaker, but we can't protect our heart. And the heart is stimulated by an electrical impulse. It's sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. And we've done studies where we measured the heart rate and the heart rate variability while people were exposed to a cordless phone, for example, without them knowing it. So that, you know, they're lying down, they've got a heart monitor on, they've got their eyes closed, they're relaxing. And then we turn on something in the environment and we watch their heart rate. And then we turn it off and we watch their heart rate. So we can compare what happens when they're exposed and not exposed. And we found that some percentage of the population, and in our study, it was close to a third of the population or 40%, that developed either an irregular heartbeat while they were exposed or a very rapid heartbeat while they were exposed. And when we turned off the exposure, it went away right away. And some people had no effect. Their heart was, they just didn't respond. So we were actually documenting how the radiation affects the heart. The other thing we noticed is that your heart is controlled by your autonomic nervous system. So we don't have to think about, you know, our heart beating. It just does it automatically. And it's controlled by something called the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So we have these two that are opposing. And your sympathetic nervous system gets you to, you know, speed up your body. It's the fight or flight response. And your parasympathetic nervous system calms you down. And so you have to have both working, you know, in unison. So you have to be able to be calmed down. What we're finding is that with a lot of people who are sensitive, they don't have the parasympathetic response. They're just always wired, always stressed, always in high mode. And because of that, they're getting worse because of those symptoms. And that's why in our R squared ID, the second R stands for dealing with the autonomic nervous system and reducing your sympathetic response and calming you down. And whether you do that with, you know, meditation, going for a walk in the woods, petting a cat, listening to music, it doesn't matter, but it helps bring you down. Absolutely vital. The parasympathetic nervous system is for rest. So it's engaged while you're sleeping. And if it's not engaged, you can't sleep. It's for digestion. A lot of people are having digestive disorders because they're constantly anxious and they can't digest properly. And it's for healing. And so if you never go into the parasympathetic mode, your body has a really hard time healing. So that increase in the parasympathetic is absolutely vital for recovery. And regarding the moratorium on 5G, there are people around the world, scientists, medical doctors, engineers, teachers, you know, from every walk of life, asking for there to be a moratorium on 5G because we have had no long-term testing of any of this radiation, not 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G. And we know that 1G to 4G, fourth generation, are harmful. We know that the scientific evidence is absolutely overwhelming. In addition to the electrohypersensitivity that I spent the lecture on, there's also an increase in cancers. And there's also problems with reproduction, particularly the effect on sperm and the effect on the newborn. And we're finding that children or mothers, while they're pregnant, if they're using Wi-Fi technology, if they're using cell phones, if they're exposed to this radiation, they have a greater risk of their offspring developing attention hyperactivity disorder and possibly part of the autism spectrum disorder by the age of six. So they're developing developmental problems that usually show up by the age of six. So really, really serious for the next generation to minimize this exposure. So we've got, there are scientists asking for a moratorium on 5G. The likelihood of that happening is really minimal, simply because the telecom industry is so powerful. They've purchased a lot of the governments. They've infiltrated a lot of the federal organizations that make the rules. And so it's going to take a concerted effort from all of us to try to get that reversed at some stage. And the satellites are going up as we speak. So we're being exposed to that radiation, even though it doesn't show up on some of the maps that I showed you earlier.
Dr. Havas, I saw you in your questions from 13 to 36. So I don't remember. It just actions that you can take in your house that are you are able to change, like you can turn off your router at night and other stuff. But let's talk about other things like cell phones antennas. There are you don't have so much control. Like, what do you think is our best strategy as citizens from Canada, from Brazil, from South America, from Europe, from everywhere, that we can work together as citizen and as concerned citizen? And what do you think about the EARC, the International Agency of Research on Cancer? I believe it's been 10 years that they don't meet to talk about specifically EMF. Of course, they need to talk about other issues, but I think there's been 10 years, more than 10 years, there they don't meet to talk about EMF specifically. So right. Two questions. What do you think is the best strategy of all these groups? There we have some groups in Brazil, Argentina, United States, Canada, Europe, to work together to move something to those sources that are not in our home, it's in our neighbor, it's satellites and other stuff that we can do together.
Okay. When it comes to the first question about IARC, I-A-R-C, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, they're part of the World Health Organization, and they've come up with guidelines for both extremely low frequency electromagnetic fields coming from your use of electricity, for example. They classified that as a possible human carcinogen back in 2002, so a long time ago. In 2011, I believe it was, they classified radio frequency radiation as a class 2B carcinogen, which means possibly carcinogenic. What was missing in 2011 were large-scale animal studies. There was only one large-scale animal study that was done by the U.S. Air Force back in 1992. Since then, there have been two large-scale animal studies with rats and mice. One was conducted by the National Institute of Health in the United States, and one was conducted by the Ramazzini Institute in Italy. And both of those studies showed an increase in cancers in the animals that they were testing. So that the what was missing in 2011 has now been produced in 2017 or 16, I think it was, that these studies came out. So we now have that information. And that information should change the classification from a 2B, possibly carcinogenic, to a 1, definitely carcinogenic to humans. Scientists and medical doctors around the world who study this have come up with that conclusion. Unfortunately, IARC is not well funded, and there is political pressure for them not to review the guidelines. So it's not going to happen anytime soon because of the political pressure. Now, you asked about what can we do if there's a cell tower near our home? It's, you know, we can't move it. We can move, so that's a possibility, but almost anywhere you move, a cell tower can then come in afterwards. But there are things you can do to protect yourself from neighbors. There are a lot of products available that do work. There's a paint that's available that you can paint on your wall that will stop the radiation, most of it, from coming through. There's film you can put on your window that will shield you from the radiation. And there's more coming through glass than coming through brick or concrete. There's material that you can buy that consists of a silver fiber coated with a cotton coat over top. And this, you can make curtains out of it. You can make a canopy for your bed. And that way you can shield yourself at nighttime if it's not something that you can turn on or off. And if you happen to use one of these canopies, and by the way, they're available at the www.slt.co website, the Safe Living Technologies website, and lessemf.com, which is a website in the United States, lessemf.com, where you can buy these products. If you put a canopy over your bed, and it's like a mosquito net kind of canopy, you have to put it all around, including underneath your bed. And the reason for that is if you've got radiation coming from the floor beneath you, it will hit the canopy and re-radiate onto your body. So if you don't apply these canopies properly, you can make your situation a lot worse. Now, what I recommend is for people to buy a meter. And as you know, we're doing a project called Can You Brag About Your City? And we're recommending that people purchase this meter. It's not inexpensive. There are less expensive meters that you can get just to measure your own home. And I can provide that information to you later on, and you can put it on your website when you share this information with people. But this is called a Safe and Sound Pro Meter. And it measures the microwave radiation and the radio frequency radiation in my environment. I'm in this environment. You can see that it's green, right? You can see it's green, and you can see the readings. If I turn on my Wi-Fi on my computer, and I'm going to turn the sound on, do you see how it's changing? And that's just turning on the Wi-Fi on my computer.
800 average, no, maximum. Average?
The maximum is 1,130 so far. And it's going
Did you turn on the Wi-Fi or the Bluetooth only?
I turned on the Wi-Fi on my computer. If I turn on Bluetooth as well. Goes even higher.
Só para falar para as pessoas do Brasil, no português, que ela está mostrando a medição do antes, quando estava sem Wi-Fi, e agora, depois que ela ligou o Wi-Fi, o pulso começou a ser medido pelo medidor, o pulso da frequência, e depois também com o Bluetooth, como aumenta, né?
I've turned them both off now. So I'll turn on the Bluetooth again, just the Bluetooth. And let me zero this so we start. So let me turn it off. I'll do this properly. Hold on. So right now in my home, I don't have any source of radiation. If anything comes in, it's from neighbors. So my neighbors are fairly far away from me, so that's not too bad. And here the peak value, which is the middle value, is 7.87. Okay, now I'm going to turn on the Wi-Fi, it's Bluetooth. And we'll just let it run for about half a minute. And then we'll look at the maximum reading again, which is in the middle. Let me see if I can move this closer. Okay. Do you see how the levels are increasing? And so my maximum value now is 64. And I'm going to turn on the Wi-Fi. And now my values are 962, the maximum. So you can see that this radiation, now I'm turning everything off. And everything quiets down again. So, you know, I can't feel this radiation, so I can't tell when I'm exposed and when I'm not exposed, but this meter will tell me and it can help protect me when I'm in different environments. Now, you had that symbol on the Bragg study thing on the message board. We started a research group with people around the world and it's called Can You Brag About Your City? And we're asking for volunteers from different countries. We've got 15 countries so far, including Brazil. We have three people, I think, measuring in Brazil. So this is wonderful. We'd love to have more South American countries participating. So if you could share some of the information that I'll send to you about Bragg, if you could share that with some of your, you know, friends in Brazil and in other South American countries, that would be wonderful. And basically what we're asking, the Bragg stands for Black, Red, Amber, and Green. So we're converting all of the numbers into a low frequency, a low emission, which would be green, and a high emission, which would be black. And we're simply asking people to measure their city along a main street at five intersections, share that data with me, and then I will put that into a map and we'll share it with the world. So it's one way of getting citizens doing monitoring. And the reason this is important is because most governments do not monitor. They provide guidelines. It's like having a traffic cop that says the speed limit here is, you know, 60 kilometers per hour, but no one monitoring whether you're going 80, 90, 120. So knowing what we're exposed to is really important. The government is failing to do this. And so we're getting people around the world to do it and show the government how what needs to be done.
Dr. Magda, a question. We know this RF subject is very technical subject, and at the same time is something that affects our everyday life of housekeepers, of children, of elderly people. And at the same time is something a little bit technical, invisible, with no odor, no sound. And one question is how to make a very technical subject and very complex more simple to the people. I think you have very good pedagogic or
yes, didactic. Pedagogical, yeah.
Yeah, for people they are not a study or not expert of the subject to know a little bit more about. And as you compare with speed limit, like you in the United States, people use miles per hour. A lot of other countries use kilometers per hour.
Right.
So it's compared like at the same time, the same issue with temperature, Celsius, Fahrenheit, and makes more complicated when you have many units. And in this subject of RF protection, we also have the same situation with the units. I see you are guys using microwatts per square meters as power density. What's your suggestion? Like, also two questions. What's the good strategies to make a very technical subject more simple, more understandable for everyone? And what's the best unit to use if you think is microwatts per square meters? What do you think about volts per meter? And I'm not sure what unit they use more in Europe. But you'd be very nice if the whole world used the same unit. It would be right. Much more simple. I see a lot of people using milliwatts per square meter. Other people use watts for centimeters, squared centimeters. So what's your suggestion to unify the units? I think unify the units.
Right. I don't think there's actually a need to unify the units. Some meters are measuring volts per meter, and you know, you'd have to redesign that meter internally to change the value, but you can convert from one to the other. So whether you're dealing with miles per kilometer, you know, miles or kilometers, you can convert from one to the other. In the Bragg study, we're only using one unit and it's microwatts per meter squared. We can convert that to volts. We can convert that to anything. But if we all use the same unit, then we can all measure equally. One way to make something very technical easy for people to understand is you relate it to something they're already familiar with. And light, the visible light, is part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And so it has a lot of the same properties of microwaves and radio frequency. So with visible light, we know that there are different colors. The colors are different frequencies. So we have red, orange, yellow, green, blue. They're all slightly different frequencies. And same with microwaves and radio frequency. They're just at different frequencies. So when you dial into a radio station, you're actually dialing into their frequency that they're communicating on. So you think of the radio station as a train that's taking information to people through the air. And the people inside the train would be the equivalent of sound or music or something else. When it comes to light, we know that light is reflected by mirrors or anything shiny, right? Microwaves are reflected by metal, same thing. When it comes to light, we know it's absorbed. If you're wearing something black, you'll get hotter faster because it's absorbing the radiation. And things like water will absorb microwaves. So the same type of thing. And we have things that will magnify. So if you take a magnifying glass and you have sunlight shining through it, you can really focus that the light until it will burn a piece of paper. You can get it that hot and you can get it focused. And you can focus microwaves as well, which would make them absolutely deadly. So a good way to use it as a weapon is to microwave someone at a close distance with a high intensity. And over time, you will kill them. They will die because of the damage to their internal organs. And indeed, the US military is using millimeter wave technology, which is part of the 5G that's introduced. They're using it in the military for crowd control. And so they have a truck with a big antenna, radar looking like antenna on it. They focus it on a person and that person feels it. It's so hot, they just have to get away from it. It causes sweat. It causes the sweat to boil on the surface of their skin. So it feels like they're getting burned. The reason they're not damaged is because they can't tolerate it and they move out. If they couldn't move out and they were exposed for a long period of time, you would have damage from that radiation, permanent damage.
Dr. Magda, does also the 5G wavelength, does it also reflect metals?
Yes. 5G actually consists of three different wavelength bands. It has something called a low bandwidth, which is less than 1 gigahertz, which is the frequency. So less than 1 billion cycles per second. That's one part of the millimeter wave of the 5G system. The second part is intermediate band, and this consists of less than 6 gigahertz frequencies. And then we have a millimeter wave band that is very small wavelengths that they're, you know, getting from satellites and from small cell antennas they're putting up near your home. And they have some technical issues with them right now, but they carry the most amount of information. They're the smallest wavelength. They're the highest frequency. They have the most energy. And we simply don't know what the long-term consequences of being exposed to millimeter waves is. We don't know. There hasn't been any studies done for long-term consequences. We know that everything below 8 gigahertz that we can measure is harmful. So there's no reason to expect that millimeter waves would be innocuous, wouldn't be harmful at all.
Dr. Havas, we can read some question here from the audience. There's a question from Roberto Batista. How the organized society could interfere in policies to protect their environment and health concerning EMF?
What was the first part of that question? How could what?
How the organized society,
can
how
protect-
the citizens could interfere in policies to protect their environment and health concerning EMF?
You know, I'm a scientist, so when it comes to changing policy or dealing with governments, I've had incredibly frustrating experiences. We've tried to reach government agencies. They sometimes hear us, but they don't really listen. They give us time to share our concerns, and then they ignore everything. So we have not been very successful, but there are groups around the world. And if you did an internet search, there's Safe Tech, there's doctors who are dealing with safer technology. There's people involved in trying to keep schools as safe as possible. So by joining one of these organizations globally and finding out what they need people to do would be one of the best things that you could do. And it really has, there's a role there for absolutely all of us on trying to make a difference. And it probably will take most of us to change the government and the wireless industry because they're simply so powerful. And they use money to buy whatever it is they want. We don't have money, but we have people and we have intelligence. And we can certainly use that and share the information. We need to raise awareness. A lot of people still unfamiliar with this. We need to educate. We need research and we need legal action. So in the United States, there are a number of legal cases brought against the Federal Communication Commission, which regulates the industry, but they don't go out and measure, they don't change their guidelines, they're ignoring the science. And so there's legal action being taken by citizens against the federal government. And, you know, I hate to say this because I think there's lots of ways of dealing with things that don't require the law. But right now it's been so frustrating for so many of us that that's an option and I think it should be taken. Daniela, and, yes?
Yes, and continue to your reasoning there regarding EHS, could you please explain how it is considered an impairment in the US? And I believe it's also considered a disability in Canada under the human rights law.
It's considered the American American Disabilities Association recognizes electrohypersensitivity as a disability. And they've done this, I think, since the 1990s. So it's been on the books for a long time. However, I don't think it's really affected policy very much. There's a lot of people that don't realize this is a disability. And so they don't use the American Disabilities Act to promote their cause. In Canada, we have a Human Rights Commission that has a document by Meg Sears on electrohypersensitivity and multiple chemical sensitivity, so environmental disabilities in Canada. In Sweden, it's recognized as an environmental impairment. So the person isn't disabled, it's the environment that's causing the impairment. And just like we accommodate people in wheelchairs by putting in elevators and ramps, we will need to accommodate people with electrohypersensitivity by reducing their exposure. But it's recognized as a disease by the international group that monitors diseases as well. And there's a code for it, so doctors can actually use it when they're diagnosing their patients with this.
Okay, there's another question. Silvia, you have a question? Go ahead.
Yes, I saw on your website that you have an institution called ROSE, right? Research of Subtle Energy. It's very interesting. I loved looking at your site. And I saw that you are planning on producing a documentary, a series about healing. Could you talk a little bit about it for us, please?
Yes, the ROSE Lab is my research lab, and we have a website for it. And here we're trying to figure out, let me just back up a little bit. I have two websites so far. The third one we're working on. My website, magdahavas.com, is dealing with all the harmful effects of electromagnetic pollution. It's all the nasty stuff. My website, theroselab.com, is dealing with healing therapies and using pulsed electromagnetic fields or light. And we're doing research with this. So when people come out with different devices and they say, you know, this will take away your pain, and it's using pulsed electromagnetic signals, I've purchased those devices and I've been testing them to find out a number of things. One is what they claim. You know, whether it's getting rid of pain or something else, we check to see if it's actually working. The other thing that we're doing is, can people who have developed sensitivity, can they still use the technology? And we found that if you're extremely electro hypersensitive, you can't. It's just, your body just can't tolerate it. But once you begin to recover, at some stage, it will benefit your body. And in Canada, these devices have been approved by Health Canada, and they can make three claims. One is it will increase your circulation, which is a good thing. The other thing is it will decrease inflammation, which is good. And the third thing, it will relieve pain. So those things, our government has actually recognized that this technology does. And that's true for pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, as well as light therapy. I've been working with a videographer, a document producer. His name is Bob Conley, and we've been working on this for about 10 years. He's just about to release it this year, and it should come out hopefully by the fall. He's been working on it for a long time. It's going to be called Tesla Medicine, because Nikola Tesla actually invented some of the therapies that we're using now. So he was a genius, right? So it's about his life and his inventions and how they're being used currently. Once that video becomes available, I will definitely let people know about it, because it will be well worth watching. So thank you for asking.
Thank you very much. There's another question in the same subject from Rafael. It's in Portuguese. I'll try to translate here.
Thank you.
Dr. Magda, you said that the communication based on infrared light, it could be used without risk. Back some years ago, exists a technology called IRDA, but it's not used anymore due to the wireless technologies. Okay. So he's asking about infrared light to use to transmit information, like the remote control, right?
That's right. Like your clicker here, right? Your
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And the remote control of the TV is also, right? The mouse, yeah.
So infrared light heats the body, and it's actually used therapeutically. It's used in infrared saunas, for example. It's used with light therapy. And simply by clicking a button and getting one, you know, burst of infrared light, it won't harm you. There's no evidence available that will harm you. And there's very, you know, not a lot of technology uses infrared, but using light may be better than using microwaves. There's something that's coming out right now, and it's called Li-Fi. So instead of Wi-Fi, which is wireless, Li-Fi is using light. And so they're doing research where you have a light on your ceiling that's going to send the information to your computer. So the light will be carrying that information. Unfortunately, that light will flicker, and we know that flicker affects people. So we don't know if there's going to be biological effects of that. The value of Li-Fi compared to microwave or Wi-Fi is that it won't penetrate your neighbors. So your neighbors won't be exposed. So to me, that's a real advantage, although it might not be 100% safe. We'll have to just wait and see about that.
And also, we had an interview with Dr. Professor Ben Ishai from Israel. I'm not sure if you heard about him, but he was telling us about a technology, something called phantom cells or something like that, in Shanghai. And he had a friend, it was EHS, and everywhere he couldn't go. But when he went to Shanghai, he didn't have the symptoms with this different technology. I don't have so many details.
Huh.
But I think at the same time, we talk about the wired and cabled use to increase the use. We always have some devices that are essentially wireless, like the mobile phone. So it's very important to us as humankind to think about some wireless technology that is not harmful for the health. I can't believe we are so ingenious as humans that you cannot create a technology that's not harmful for the health. I
believe, Fabiano, that photo technology uses the scalar frequencies. And Tesla talks a lot about that wave, because it's a wave frequency that can also carry information.
That's right.
It's not harmful for the health.
Well, we don't know. I think part of whether something is harmful or not depends on how much you're exposed. If your body is exposed all the time to things that are constantly changing electromagnetically, we are electromagnetic. So it's causing interference within our body. And even some of the therapies that are beneficial, the pulsed electromagnetic field therapy or the light therapy, you don't expose your body 24 hours a day. You expose your body for half an hour or for 10 minutes. And that's all your body needs. It doesn't need more than that. You know, if we exposed, ourselves just to light 24 hours, we wouldn't be able to sleep properly, right? So we know that light is healing, but you have to have it on and off at appropriate times. And so, you know, whether we can design different technologies that will convert harmful frequencies into less harmful or even healing frequencies may be a possibility. But for constant exposure, I just find that difficult to understand how something like that works because of the way the body is configured. We have brain waves that are electromagnetic. Our nervous system is electromagnetic. Our heart's electromagnetic. We're all electromagnetic, and so there can be interference with that system. That interference ultimately will lead to illness and injury. And injury is the terminology that's used in legal professions for damage, right, Daniela? So, you know, sometimes saying someone's electrohypersensitive isn't enough, but if they've been injured by something electromagnetic, then you can use it in a case court of law.
Thank you.
Well, workers are already people that works within electricity. They are being exposed to electric magnetic fields, and that is in labor law being recognized as dangerous and harmful for their for the type of work, right, they do.
You know, there's one occupation that few people realize has really high exposure, and that's people who work on commercial sewing machines, because that needle is going up and down. It's changing constantly. It's exposing them to changing magnetic fields all the time. Really, really dangerous. And they're actually, because they're sitting so close to that sewing machine, that their bodies are actually exposed to really, really high levels, not of necessarily radio frequency, but dirty electricity and electric and magnetic fields. So sometimes occupations that we don't think will be affected are actually terribly affected by this. So, you know, we're going into a place where they have these professional sewing machines, they're putting, you know, garments together or tents or whatever. It would be interesting to find out what those people are exposed to with the appropriate technology and equipment.
Dr. Magda Havas, we are almost 1 hour and 10 minutes close to finish, but I would like to finish with hope. And I saw the three drawings. One is the water level like this, like here, and the other one is green. So I would like to ask you, what places in the world, what cities or what countries do you think can bring hope to the world? And if you think there's EMF, there's some relations with the curve that tobacco had like many years, like the cigarettes. Like if you think the cigarettes in the beginning of the last century, like doctors telling the people to use, smoke, that's good for the health.
Yeah.
And how this curve, where we are in this curve, and how many years do you think we have like maybe a critical mass in the society that know more about this EMF problems?
Well, with things like tobacco, smoke, or any kind of environmental problem, asbestos, for example, or, you know, DDT, lead in gasoline, that sort of thing. Scientists, you know, we have guidelines for it. And scientists do research and they find out those guidelines aren't protective. So they ask that guidelines be reduced. But there's reluctance to reduce guidelines until there's enough public pressure to, you know, pressure the government and say, look, we want you to do something. Your job is to protect us, so do your job. That normally takes anywhere from, you know, 50 years from first discovering the problem to resolving it. And sometimes it's slightly shorter and sometimes it's longer. With asbestos, we knew asbestos was harmful back in the early 1900s. The insurance industries weren't insuring anyone who had asbestos-related illnesses. It first was in the newspaper in the 1920s, and it was the 1970s and 80s where a lot of research was done, and eventually, you know, asbestos was removed from buildings and other products. So it's taken a very long time. With electrosmog, we've known from at least the 1940s and 50s that this is dangerous. So we're well over the 50-year mark, and it's time for us to really recognize how dangerous this technology is. Some of it has only been around for about 20 years or 25 years, for example, and smart meters are just coming in. So unfortunately, what's happening is everyone wants wireless because of its convenience. And so our levels of exposure are just going like this, you know, and once it goes up like this to me, I'm not doing too well anymore. And we can't see it though. So we have to be able to measure it, and we have to report to the government, and we have to get the media involved. And ultimately, I know we're going to win. I just know it. We've won every single time. I just hope it's going to be sooner rather than later. And the more people that learn about this, the more likely we are to make progress. So thank you so much for doing this program and sharing the information with people. And please ask, you know, let us know what we can do to help you, because it takes all of us to save this planet, not only for humans, but for plants, animals, insects, everything. They're being damaged as well.
Thank you. How the Global EMF Monitoring Project, the people there watching us, how can they join us from Brazil, from other countries? There's an email address or...
Okay, yeah, I can send you an email address, or you'd like it now?
Yeah, you can put in the private chat, and I put here.
Okay, let me just try to find it then on my computer.
Or just tell me that I can also write here.
Okay, I can probably put it in. I put it in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
Chat. Here. So this is the email address that people can reach me at. It's called brag.city.rf@gmail.com. If they contact me and let me know they'd like to be involved in this project, it's probably too late for them to participate in the April project, but we'll be having projects, you know, in May, June, July, and continuing. So it doesn't matter when they join. Once they join, we'll give them the information. We have a website that we're developing. I don't want to give you the link yet because it hasn't been developed, but all of the information will be on there. And then we have 2 Zoom meetings a month for people to share their results and for me to report back to them and with the results and for new projects to be initiated.
Okay, so the people that are interested, just email to brag.city.rf@gmail.com. So tell their name, the cities, right?
We need their name. We need the city that they would be willing to monitor, the country they're from, and a state or a province as well. Okay. And then I would then send them information so they'd be able to follow what other people have received so far.
Okay. And here in Brazil, we have like some meters, and maybe people that live together can share the meters. We can also, Daniela and Silvia and me and Aline, we can give more details than that. Ah, there is a question here from Professor Alvaro de Sales. If you have some suggestion of maximum EMF exposure level, would it be the green maybe? I don't know.
Okay, there are most scientists believe there's no safe level. The higher you're exposed to, the worse it is, but the longer you're exposed, the worse it is. So you could be exposed to a low level for a long period of time that would cause a problem. There are recommendations from Salzburg, and there's recommendations from the building biologists for different levels of exposure that you want to be under. When you're outside, when you're inside, and in your bedroom. And the bedroom levels are the lowest. And if you go to the Building Biology Institute website, they have that information for you.
Thank you very much. So that's the website, theroselab.com, magdahavas.com. This is the email of the Global Monitoring Project. So thank you very much, Dr. Magda. We thank you. Thank you, Daniela. Thank you, Silvia.
Thank you, Dr. Magda Havas. And welcome to Brazil.
Thank you.
Okay, we keep in touch. Thank you, everyone, that's watching us. See you guys later. Bye. Bye-bye.